Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel.
This program was underwritten in part by VisitScotland.com, the official site of Scotland's National Tourism Organization. To learn more about Scotland, go to VisitScotland.com.
In this, the first of a series of interviews about life in Scotland, we visit with Jim Fairley, the organizer of farmers markets in Scotland. He's a farmer by trade at Logie Almond Farm near Perth, in the southern end of the Scottish Highlands. About a decade ago, following the mad cow disease crisis, Jim Fairley saw the need for farmers to market their own produce, rather than to rely on the government to do so. After returning from a holiday in France, where he was, as he says, blown away by the local markets, he set up Scotland's now much-celebrated monthly farmers' markets. In this conversation, we discuss how the farmers' market movement gained momentum and the trials and tribulations of getting farmers and consumers to understand each other's needs. I spoke with Jim Fairley at his farmhouse kitchen table near Perth, Scotland, on May 17, 2009. Jim Fairley, welcome to Radio Curious. So tell us about farmers' markets in Scotland, how they came to be.
Well, you need to go back 10 years to 1999. In fact, it was even before that, 1998. The UK farming industry had been decimated because of the BSE crisis, where they related mad cow disease to CJD in humans. And they banned British beef from all over Europe. Prices collapsed all over the place. And for the first year of BSE, the sheep trade was actually very, very good because nobody was eating beef. Everybody went on to lamb and mutton. But after that, there was just scare story after scare story coming out in the popular press, or what we call the tabloid press in this country. And it meant that the farming community were very badly represented in terms of, you know, we were represented as people who were not looking after their stock and that we were always taking cheap shortcuts and all this sort of stuff, which was totally untrue. It was just that the situation had arisen with BSE, and it made our reputation very, very bad indeed.
So you're talking about a period of time when people would get their food from grocery stores or supermarkets as opposed to directly where it was grown.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Presumably with a high percentage of imported food?
At that time, the food culture in Scotland was very much a case of eating on the hop, if you know what I mean.
No, what do you mean?
Food wasn't a social thing or a cultural thing. It wasn't a thing that you would sit down with your family and have a meal. It was something that you ate for sustenance. You ate your dinner and you moved on and you did the next thing. We were a very, very busy, busy lifestyle. And the whole of Scotland, not just Scotland, the whole of the UK, I refer to it as being us being the Thatcher generation, where it was all about money, 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 push, push, push. And, you know, there wasn't time to sit down and actually enjoy food and all that it gave as something that we do every day. So we would definitely see people buying all their stuff from a supermarket rather than directly from a producer. But how that changed from my point of view, or from what I wanted to do, was I was producing what I thought was a very, very top quality produce in lamb. And the lamb that I was producing, I thought was fantastic. I was very, very proud of it. And I came into the farming industry as a townie. I wasn't born into farming. I came living in a housing estate and found my way into farming. I knew people's perceptions of farmers weren't good from the town because most of my friends were still living in the towns. And it bugged me because we were very, very hardworking. I was extremely proud of what the industry did for Scotland, for its culture, for its landscape, and I just felt that we were getting a raw deal during the whole BSE crisis. There was an agricultural minister at the time who said that if farmers wish to get out of their present crisis, they will have to market their way out of it. Now, for an American audience.
Staying within the same Thatcher economic forum that you mentioned.
Yeah, I mean,
similar to Ronald Reagan at the parallel time.
Yes, they weren't interested in nurturing the industry. The industry had to stand on its own 2 feet. That was basically what Lord Sewell was saying. It's not our problem. You deal with it. So, as a farmer, and now I wasn't farming at that time, I was employed by someone else as a shepherd, but I did all the buying and selling of all the stock that were on the farm. And it raised a real question in your head. How do you, as a farmer, shepherd, stockman, pigman, however, how do you go and sell your produce? Because if you remember that after the Second World War, the agricultural industry in this country had been nurtured by the government, subsidised by the government, and told, you grow the food, we'll sell it for you. That was the deal, because during the war, the UK almost starved into submission when the Germans were sinking the U-boats coming across from America with supplies and all the rest of it. So we, as a country, and farming as an industry, had gotten used to this. All farmers had to do was grow it. It wasn't their job to sell it. So all of a sudden, they flipped the lid and said, go out and market yourself. And there was no way to do that. Now, how do you go out and market your produce when your entire industry, your entire previous three generations, they have absolutely no concept of how to market their own produce? It wasn't their job.
So how has this change brought about?
My brother is Andrew Fairley at Gleneagles. He's the only two Michelin star restaurant in Scotland. And I had gone to him and said, will you buy lamb off me? Because we are getting really bad prices for it at market. Can you not buy it, sell it in your restaurant, give me a wee bit of extra for it, and then everybody wins. And he said, yeah, that's great. What I need is 10 French trimmed rack of lambs, and I'll need that delivered on Thursday. I said, whoa. I hadn't a clue what a French trimmed rack of lamb was. All I wanted him to do was take the whole lamb, and it wasn't something that he could do. What that demonstrated to me was his industry and my industry were the same, but we were worlds apart. It made me understand that we needed the whole food supply chain to be working together to get local food onto the menu.
So how did you do it?
Well, I still had this quote in my head from Lord Sewell that we had to market our way out of trouble. So we went on holiday to France, then it was a place called Saint-Jean-de-Mont. One of the things that they advertised to the tourist people was to come along and visit the local farmer's market. We walked in, it was myself and Anne, that's my wife, my girls, Caitlin and Barry. We walked into the market and it was like, bingo. I said, Anne, this is it.
They were doing it in France?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But not in the UK?
Not in the UK. Well, they were doing it in England, but they certainly weren't doing it in Scotland. There was no farmer's markets in Scotland at that time.
And what year was this?
This was in 1998. They were selling absolutely everything. They had vegetables, fruits, hams, fish, cheese, milk. But it was the French, they just did it. That's where they got their shopping. They went on a Monday, Wednesday and Friday, and the market ran from 8 till 12, and it was part of their culture. And I was absolutely blown away, and I thought, my God, why can we not do this in Scotland? So, one of the stalls, the woman had this kind of Parma ham thing hanging on the side, and she was trimming bits of it off, and she was throwing it to a pup that was underneath her stall. And the puppy was for sale as well, I found completely bizarre, but it was a genuine farmer's market, a producer's market. They were growing it, bringing it to the town and selling it. And that was where I got the inspiration from. When I came back to Perth, actually making that happen up here was hugely, hugely difficult. A, because of the culture. B, getting the sort of authorities to actually allow us to do it. And C, getting the farming community to actually grasp the idea.
So the culture and the farming community were somewhat similar in that there had been many generations of farmers producing the goods but not distributing them.
You've absolutely hit the nail on the head. That's exactly what it was. We were becoming disparate as communities. You know, the townies and the country people, and never the twain shall meet. You know, they just didn't mix at all. And that was to the detriment not only of our food culture in this country, but also of the farming industry, because it just added weight to that perception that people had that we weren't doing the right thing by our animals or our countryside and anything else.
In this edition of Radio Curious, we're visiting with Jim Fairley at his farm.
We're at Kingdom Park Farm, Harriet Field, Low Yarmond, Perthshire.
And this is Radio Curious on tour in Scotland. I'm Barry Vogel. Jim, how were you able to bring these divergent groups together?
With a great deal of cajoling, persuading, door knocking, telephone ringing. It was very difficult. I didn't actually know very many farmers, to be honest with you. Because I was a townie and came into the industry from the outside, I knew the very small group that were in the area where I lived at that time. But I didn't actually know much of the wider community. I knew who people were, but it wasn't as though I knew them well enough to go up, knock on their door and say, how do you fancy taking part in this? So one of the first things I did was I approached a councillor from Perth and Kinross Council, and I said to him, look, I want to set up a farmer's market in Perth Town Centre. What do you think? And he was a farmer himself. And he says, yeah, great idea. Let's just wait and see what happens. And I approached a couple of farmers and said, how do you feel about going to sell your products in the centre of Perth? And there was a lot of head shaking, and I'm not really sure about that. That'll never work. However, cut a long story short, I eventually got them persuaded that it was worthwhile doing, at least on a trial basis, and see what happened. But I met some fantastic people at the time. There was a Margaret Matthews, who was the city centre manageress in Perth and Kinross. She was brilliant. She helped just sell the whole idea to the council. The council's economic development department, they decided Perth is a big agricultural area, we need to try and do something because things are really desperate. So meeting these people was probably the best thing that happened, because they allowed the opportunity for this event to take place in 1999. My job was to go out and persuade the farming community that this was a good idea. And I eventually managed to persuade about 11 of us to get together and take our stuff into Perth and just see how it happened.
And then?
Well, Perth Minerals Council did a fantastic job in getting the message out that farmers were going to be bringing their own produce into the town centre in Perth. The whole industry was absolutely on its knees. There was literally not a good news story to be had. There was nobody saying anything good about farming at all. Suddenly, there was this wee chink.
With the people not saying anything good about farming, how did they expect to be fed?
The two things just did not connect at all. One of the biggest jobs we've had in the last 10 years is getting people to understand that the food that they eat comes from us. If you go into an inner city school in Glasgow or Edinburgh or London, any of these places, and you ask the kids where a potato comes from, or where an egg comes from, or where milk comes from, they'll tell you it comes from the supermarket. They'll not be able to tell you how it actually got there. And that's how far removed the urban community in the UK have gotten from where the food actually comes from. Now, that was 10 years ago. That has changed, certainly, in the last 10 years because of what we've done with farmers' markets and, you know, people beginning to really buy into the whole local food issue.
In terms of the economic cost to the consumer,
yeah,
is it about equal from a farmer's market as it is from a supermarket?
When we first started off, no, it wasn't. It was probably cheaper to get it in a supermarket than what it was to get it from us. But that gap has lessened now, and I would say it's probably there will be circumstances where it's dearer to buy it in a supermarket than what it is to buy it at a farmer's market now, because they've actually latched on to the fact that people... The first farmer's market that we had in Perth that took place on April the 3rd, 1999, and because of the media thing that the Perth and Kinross Council had done, it exploded. It literally exploded. I could not believe the amount of people, the media coverage, the television, the newspapers, the radio, everybody wanted to know about what was going to happen in Perth. And we had the 12 stalls, and every one of us, we started at 9 o'clock in the morning, and every single one of us was sold out by 11:30, 11:45. There was nothing left. There was literally not a thing to be had. As a result of that, we then did another one, and another one, and now we've got a farmer's market in Perth every month. We only have it once a month because the culture hasn't quite got to the stage where we can do it on a weekly basis. But there are over 60 markets throughout the country as a result of that first one. But it's taken a long time to sort of build up that momentum. Now, because the supermarkets have seen that this is something which is working, If you go past any of the major supermarkets now, they'll say, working with local suppliers. We have a list of local suppliers. They've got farmers' faces on packets of meat and packets of potatoes and all that sort of stuff. They've bought into that, what I would term as our monopoly, or our unique selling point, or our the thing that is unique to us is the fact that we can guarantee this traceability. The supermarkets have bought right into that, so that they've increased their prices. As we've gotten better at it, we've reduced our prices, so that gap has shrunk considerably.
Tell us about the food quality and the difference between what you grow and what is found or was found in the supermarkets before the development of farmers' markets.
I'm going to be very careful here because I'm not going to knock the quality of the produce that supermarkets are producing just now, because some of it is very good. But they have realised themselves that to get that quality, they have to pay that bit more. And they're only going to get that quality by dealing with the farming community and making sure that they're getting the very best stuff to go on their shelves. Previous to that, it didn't matter about the quality, as far as I'm concerned. The quality was only reflected by the price. The price was the most important thing at that time. I'm quite sure that they would argue vociferously that quality was the biggest issue. And they have done some very good things in terms of making the farming community see that there are certain standards that have to be met. And I certainly wouldn't take that away from the supermarkets.
What would those standards be?
For want of a better word, cleanliness. You know, it's like it's very difficult to have that kind of level when you're a family farm like what we are here. But with those big players who are dealing with the supermarkets, the place is absolutely immaculate. They've been instrumental in pushing the idea of traceability. It's ironic because they push the idea of traceability.
Traceability from where the product
from where the product comes from to where how it gets on the shelf. They've pushed that issue, but it's actually something that we as a farming community have the benefit of. Because the only person that can guarantee that traceability is us.
So pursuing the organic concept for a minute, what is the use of organic methods versus non-organic methods?
I'm not an organic farmer. All I can give you is what I know. If you take hill sheep, they are probably 90% naturally organic anyway, which is what we have here, because they live out in the wide open hills. They're natural grazers, and the lambs come into fields like the ones you see out here, which are very rich in clover, and that's how they're finished. That's how the majority of them are finished. And then during the winter, they'll be fed on a cereal-based diet with homegrown silage. We will use medicines. I definitely use medicines as a welfare issue. I'm not prepared to go down the organic route if that means that I can't regularly treat my sheep with a wormer to keep the worms out of the stomachs. Now there are certain things you can do with the organic system. My preference is to stick to what we have at the moment because I know it works. And I'm not entirely convinced that the organic method is any better than what I'm doing here at the moment. And it certainly doesn't have any impact on the eating quality of the lamb that I'm producing. There are some people who have organic as a lifestyle thing, and it must be organic for them, and that's fine. I have no quarrel with that. But from my own personal point of view, I like to be able to do what I need to do when I need to do it. And that, to me, is the most important thing from my point of view, is the animal welfare side of it.
And how about genetically modified aspect?
We have been genetically modifying food since time began. We haven't done it in the way that they want to do it now.
I'm distinguishing between hybridizing
right. And
inserting a gene into the dynamic.
We've been hybridization then for thousands of years. As far as genetic modification is concerned, I have to say it's something which leaves me a little queasy. I don't like the idea of taking a gene from one type of plant and putting it into another, or animal, putting it into another to create something. But I'm not a scientist. Now, you have to ask yourself, am I taking this view because I don't know enough about it, and therefore my ignorance is making me scared of it? It's something I would need to, if I was in the situation where I was going to have to use GM, I would have to do a lot more research into whether or not I was actually comfortable with it. But I don't use anything that's GM, so it's not an issue that I have to deal with, thankfully.
The future of slow food,
yep.
Farmers markets, mm-hmm. How do you see it regionally here in your home and in the greater United Kingdom and perhaps in the greater world, if you've considered that?
If you go back prior to farmers markets, the culture was, as I said, food was something to eat on the go. You ate it because it was sustenance. Now, people are beginning to get back to that. I want to sit around the table with my family at night, have a nice meal, and talk about the day. Now, that to me is slow food. Where it comes from and all the rest of it is possibly a slightly different issue. That's about local suppliers. But slow food to me is about the culture of people sitting down, having a meal, enjoying the food together, and connecting. Because we don't talk. Because we were so busy in this country, we didn't talk to each other. We were on the move all the time. The perception from people who are interested in the slow food, or the cheetah slow movement, as we call it over here, is that they definitely want to know where the food comes from. The more local, the better. But food should be seen as something which is almost a daily ritual, where you sit down and you take time with each other. And I see it growing and getting stronger and being a much, much bigger part of the culture in Scotland as we go on. Because when we started the farmers market, the age group would be in the mid to late 50s, early 60s. That was the vast majority of our customers. Now we're getting them people who are more my age and younger, where they're coming and they're bringing their children with them. And these children are coming to the farmers market and they're beginning to get the idea. Mum and Dad get their beef and their lamb and their vegetables from the farmers market. And that's slowly growing. We're now getting to the stage where they're coming to the farmers market, they're talking to us, they're finding out about the difficulties that we face, we're finding out from them what it is that they expect from the farming community, and there's a much greater appreciation and understanding of each other's position.
May I ask your age?
I'm 42.
And you talk about what people expect from the farmer community.
Yeah.
What is the expectation?
They expect us to be the guardians and the custodians of the countryside in which they are so proud. If you ask any Scot what they think of their country, they will be hugely proud of the area that they live in. They'll look at their hills and they'll say, our hills are fantastic. They expect us to look after that. They expect us to provide them with a top quality, safe, secure food product, which they know that when they're feeding it to their children, they've got nothing to worry about.
Is there a parallel side or a reverse side to their expectations in what people who are not farmers feel is their obligation to meet the expectation?
I'm not entirely convinced about that, no. The people that you're talking about, yes. The people who come to the farmers market, yes. They have an obligation to come and buy off us in order to keep us coming. From that point of view, yes, I can see where you're coming from. We still have a lot of work to do in this country so that people in the broader community understand what it is that we are trying to do as farmers. We have a thing in Scotland called the right to roam, which gives people access to the countryside.
To walk about,
to go wherever they like,
through
fields and all the rest of it. Now, I don't have a problem with that in principle. Where I do have a problem with that is where they don't fully appreciate the effect of their presence in that field has. I'm right in the middle of Lamantine, or coming to the tail end of my Lamantine just now, and we still have people coming from the town, walking dogs, through areas where I'm lambing sheep. Now, hill sheep are flighty, to say the least. So you get somebody walking through the field. It's a fairly rough area, wild kind of an area. They're walking through the fields with their dogs, and the yow, or the sheep, the female sheep, takes off in one direction, and the lamb takes off in the other direction, and they get split up. I then have to try and put them back together. If the weather's bad and the lamb gets chilled and gets hypothermia, I find it dead the next morning. There's that sort of thing. From my point of view, one of the jobs that we have in the farmers' market is to educate them that we want to see them in the countryside, we want them to enjoy the kind of countryside that we have, but we don't want them to be abusing it. So they need to learn far more about what we do. And I don't blame them for that. It's just because the situation is that they have become so removed from what the countryside is, and we have become so removed from educating them that we need to bring that gap much closer. So there's a big job to be done on both things.
Well, Jim Farley, I want to thank you for inviting us into your home and for this conversation. And I'd like to ask two questions before we close.
Okay.
One is an aha or eureka moment that you've had recently.
Well, probably the biggest eureka moment was walking into the farmer's market at Saint-Jean-de-Mont. And that's been a real life-changing one, I have to say.
And before we move on, give us briefly your background.
I'm one of five. We were brought up in a housing estate in Perth called Lethem. My father was a teacher. My mother, she was a manageress of a shoe shop. One of the things that we did have as children was that table time, where we sat down, the seven of us sat down every night and we sat and had dinner together. And I think we benefited as a family greatly from that.
Did you go to university?
Nope. I couldn't wait to get out of school. All I wanted to do was get out into the countryside. As a child, I had pigeons, dogs, guinea pigs, rabbits. I just wanted to work with animals. When it came to leaving school when I was 16, I hadn't a clue what I was going to do. So I stayed on to do higher, the intermediate stage between formal education and university. But the only reason I did that was because I had no idea how I was going to put this desire for working with animals into practice. I had written to vets and zoos, gamekeepers, anything that had anything to do with animals. And I got two responses. One was from a farmer saying there's nothing doing at the moment, but we'll keep you in mind. And the other one was from a vet saying you'll have to go to college to study. The thought of going back to study was an absolute no-no. I am not an academic. I like to be out in the country and doing the hands-on stuff. And the farmer who had written to me, my great uncle had worked for him 30 years previously. And I didn't know their great uncle. And this farmer had phoned me up and he said, are you in relation to Jim Fairley, who used to work for me many years ago? I have no idea. He said, who's your father? I said, he's Jim Fairley. And he said, who was his father? I said, he was Andy Fairley. He said, right. He said, you're Jimmy Fairley's great nephew then. I said, am I? He said, yes, yeah. Sure enough, my dad came home that night. I said, do you have an Uncle Jim who used to work on this farm? He says, yeah. I said, well, he's phoned me up and offered me a job. And it was purely because my name was Jim Fairley. And that's how I got from the town into the country. So that's how it got started.
Well, Jim Fairley, can you tell us about an interesting book that you've read lately?
One that I'm reading right now, and I have to say, it's interesting and it's disturbing, by a woman called Lionel Shriver. And it's We Need to Talk About Kevin. It's deeply disturbing, but it's very, very thought-provoking. As a parent, you just think, oh my God, there are nights I sit here and I've read a chapter and I just have to stop and think. And that, to me, is a book that is worth reading. I won't say it's enjoyable, but it certainly makes you think, that's for sure.
Well, Jim Fairley, thank you for being with us on Radio Curious in your kitchen.
Thank you very much for being here.
Jim Fairley is a farmer and organizer of farmers' markets in Scotland. This program is the first in a series of Life in Scotland, recorded in May 2009. The book Jim Fairley recommends is We Need to Talk About Kevin by Lionel Shriver. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious can be found on our website, www.radiocurious.org. They're also available in CD format for $14 each. At Radio Curious, we appreciate your thoughts and ideas about our programming and enjoy hearing from you. Our address is Post Office Box 7, Ukiah, that's UKIAH, California, 95482. Our email address is curious@radiocurious.org. And the phone is 707-462-6541. You've been listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Thank you for joining us.